This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Holloman stops it, finds the pass inside, shot almost blocked away and rebounded by Gillespie. 9 seconds to go. Kevin Woodard says, let's push it. 6 seconds, five. Gillespie with a three. That's no good. Rebounded by the Spartans. And Holloman trying to beat the...
Oh my gosh!
Are you kidding me? He hits a shot at the buzzer!
A 50-footer at the buzzer.
In the back court!
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, two teams battling. We shot 31%, they shot 33%. It was a dogfight. And, you know, that's the second time in a row we've come off bye weeks and just haven't played overly well. So this is all on me.
Heard the final sequence, Johnny Holiday, Chris Knocke, and Walt Williams all on the call live from the Xfinity Center. We were there last night. It was a great atmosphere, incredible. Kudos to the student section. Kudos to the crowd. That's as loud as I've ever heard that place. But unfortunately, Maryland, who was down 9 with a little over 5 minutes left, down 7 with a little over 3 minutes left, came back to tie it and had an opportunity to take the lead or win the game. But Jacoby Gillespie took a three probably too soon, and you heard the three-point shot, half-court shot at the buzzer. Goes in. Michigan State beats Maryland 58-55.
It was Izzo's night. I said I thought the way this set up would kind of play into his hands a lot of ways, the Terps being off that long, Michigan State beating their rival Michigan. This may be being a spot that they might not be that up for. The crowd's going to be nuts, though, and Vegas thinks you're going to lose by 5. Let's go out and prove them wrong, and let's make them play our game. And that's exactly what happened. The fast start from the Terps, not there. The shooting threes early to make them try to chase you with threes and not settle for twos, never happened. Getting them uncomfortable, rattling them. No, Maryland turned the ball over as much as Michigan State did, despite that great crowd behind them. Getting some semblance of an inside-outside game going. No. Having Derek Queen, who's not as accustomed to this stuff and hasn't seen them before, get activated offensively early. No.
Well, he put up some shots.
Stay within yourself. No. It just wasn't ever Maryland's kind of game. They showed a lot of heart and guts to have a chance to still win it in regulation. But they just never really looked totally comfortable. I've said it before, I'll say it again. They can win different ways. And they can win low scoring and they can win high scoring. But this was just, everything about this was more in the DNA of Sparty. It was an old school Big Ten, old school Big East rock fight. And that plays to the deeper team. That plays to the team that can trade fouls more. That plays to the team that frankly wins without the 3-point being a part of the equation. A team that's used to playing in close, low scoring, ugly, type games. The you know, Willard said it at one point, that the Terps have to learn to be a more efficient offense even when they can't hit the open three off a transition and even when they're not getting those run-and-gun great looks. That can only happen through experience. This was certainly experience gained. But if Maryland had won that game, I would have come in here and said, hey, they stole that game. I don't think they played the way they want to play. I don't think they capitalized on the home court advantage enough. And I don't think they won. Of those 40 minutes, how many did Maryland win despite having the better, fresher legs and having the home court? I didn't feel like they won enough minutes.
Yeah, but if they would have won, I wouldn't take any shame in it either.
No, I wouldn't apologize for it, but I would have said they stole that game. Sure. They went to the foul line a bunch late. They tied it, took advantage of it, and stole it late. But there was never a point where they took command of that game.
No. They were down 7 with 2 minutes, 12 seconds to go in this game. And like you said, they were able to get to the line. They were able to hit their free throws late. And they were this close to getting the game into overtime or winning it prior to regulation. But that did not look like the basketball team that we've become accustomed to seeing. The Crab Five, none of them really had great games. Rodney Rice had a great second half. He was out of sorts in the first half, taking so many off-balance looks. Derek Queen hit that mid-range to start the game, to get the scoring underway, and then he just wanted to show off his range the rest of the day. It looked like he was too amped up. The environment looked too much. Julian Reese couldn't get going at all. Jacoby Gillespie, the turnovers were an issue all night. But we haven't brought this up yet. Get a rebound. 13 offensive rebounds Michigan State had compared to Maryland's 4. They were out-rebounded by 12 in that basketball game. Maryland had only 5 fast break points, 16 points in the paint. That's not Maryland basketball.
0 second chance points.
Yeah, here's
while Sparty's getting 14, 15 offensive rebounds.
They run and Willard, and we'll hear from Willard next segment. And somebody was asked him after the game, I think, about Queen and what was the problem. He said, well, they rotated 4 7 footers, and it was the first time that we saw physicality bother Derek Queen in a while, and not only Derek Queen, but Juju was not good last night. Juju was, he was phased by it. He missed a dunk in the second half. Like, they were bothered by Michigan State's physicality. And I thought Ben, we were there last night, and he made the point of talking about the way, and we talked about it before the game, but when you see how they get back in transition, they don't allow any, like, fast breaks are tough to come by, and even transition three-pointers, they're on top of you right away. They make it difficult, but that's no excuse. I'll say this, and I don't like, I'm not being critical of the people, but Maryland as a team, other than Rice's second half, they stunk.
They would have stole the game.
Yeah, and that, but I think that's also part and parcel of how good they can be and how good they are, that with everything that went down last night, they still showed a lot of heart and were able to force a couple turnovers and get to the line and hit some free throws and had the opportunity to win the game. And then I think Jacoby Gillespie's internal clock was off. You cannot take that shot with 5 seconds left. Like 3 seconds, maybe you try to get a tip in, but you don't give the other team any time to throw it up. Now, it still took a half-court heave to beat you.
But it was endemic to me of how they played, which was they weren't the smarter team. They didn't win the Johnny Hustle Award, right? That would have gone to Sparty. And then you're also not yourself offensively. That's a lot to overcome. Their starting five was minus 28.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's one person who wore a Maryland jersey last night who made more than 3 points off the floor. It's one person on that entire roster who had more than 3 field goals made. Rodney Rice. And about that.
A team that scores 80-some points a game, they had one guy do that. It's incredible. And
everything Gillespie got was at the line.
And that's the other part.
And he didn't penetrate enough.
That's the other part about the final play. Gillespie had time to penetrate if he wanted to, and yet he settled for the 3-point shot too soon. Are they going to blow a whistle there late? I don't know. But even if they don't, you go to overtime.
That's the thing.
That's the part. Like, you have the ball in a tie game.
They're going 80 feet on you in 2 seconds.
Exactly.
And to miss it as short as he did, to have it go off front iron, to have that run out, it was a perfect storm for Michigan State.
Real quick, Ben, I wanted to get your thoughts on last night. We walked back to the car. We were parked in the same lot. And I thought something that stuck with me, and I was talking to my dad driving home, like, there are lessons to be learned for Maryland moving forward.
I think it's absolutely a good loss for them right now with where they're at. I talked to Ken about it. It was 2016, I think. Michigan State had a run like Maryland's had. They went to the Big Ten tournament, won it. They had Denzel Valentine. And then they end up losing first round to Middle Tennessee State. And it's like, well, they were just too hot. And I think that could happen with the Terps. Definitely that's not the game that you want to kind of lose the way they did. And the Jacoby Gillespie shot, I've watched more college basketball than most. If he knocks that shot down, and there's been a number of guys that have shot a three with that amount of time on the clock, and the opposing team gets a timeout with 1.9 or 2 point whatever. If he knocks that shot down, there's not a word being said about it.
Of course not.
The issue is, of course, he misses it the way he did, and it goes like that. Gillespie's been the Terps, a top two player for the Terps all year. He'll rebound from it. Again, it's just tough to have the crowd the way it was, to turn the game the way they did, all for them to lose. And also, we listened to Izzo post-game when we were there. Izzo, like, went out of his way to say that he loves that shot, and that's the shot that he knows his guys knocked down. Listen, your team almost gave the game away. He knocked down a lucky shot. You don't need to talk about how many times the dude's knocked that shot down.
Luck of Sparty. Hey, we have a huge Thursday show. We get started guest-wise. Pat Scarry, Towson Tigers have a big game tonight against William & Mary. They have clinched the one seed in the CAA tournament. He joins us at 3:30. The Hall of Famer, Tim Kirshen, covers baseball for ESPN, joins us at 4. Our Hall of Famer, Lucy Burge, BetMGM, joins us at 4:30. And we'll recap last night's loss to Michigan State with Chris Nocchi at 5.
Yeah, a lot of college basketball. It's that time of year, March Madness around awesome. The corner. I loved the environment last night. If you don't have plans tonight, or even if you do, drop them. Get down to the arena formerly known as Siku. I think it's just back to being
Towson
like
Arena.
Arena. No, the licensing agreement's up. But either way, should be a really entertaining game. Towson's had a great season, only two losses in the CAA all year. Yes, they've already clinched the share of the overall title, but it should be rocking there tonight. Excited to watch them play. We've got O's down in Sarasota. Gunnar Henderson leaving with a trainer. We will keep you abreast of that.
Tyler O'Neill's ball leaving the yard.
Yeah, Grayson, right, today?
Grayson gave him inning and two-thirds.
Grayson on the bump, so we will chronicle all of that for you guys. And we will also continue to dissect and sort of interpret what we heard from DaCosta and Harbaugh the other day from the Combine. What hints did they give us to how they might be building this roster this year, how much money they may or may not be spending, where they're going with their master plan to try to bring, I guess, a title back to Baltimore. I mean,
I think that's the goal.
I don't know if they're dead set on it or not, but
you know,
that's what they flirt with. Yeah, it's the concept that they flirt with.
They've been pretty darn good. But coming up next, Kevin Willard spoke after the game. What did he have to say about this 58-55 loss to Michigan State? Well, you're going to hear it right after.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This.
That's kind of what makes this team unique is, you know, you look at Carson Cooper plays 21 minutes, Cohen Carr plays 14, Xavier Booker hits a big three, he plays 14, Frankie Fiddler, they're all big guys. And so they all rotate in, keeps their pick and roll fresh. You know, it keeps those guys fresh. I thought we did a pretty good job for the most part. You know, we got a little down on our offense and broke down on a couple plays, but give them credit. You know, they're big, they're physical.
That was Kevin Willard after the game talking about the physical Michigan State Spartans. They played 10 guys. All 10 guys scored. Maryland only played 8 guys. None of the bench scored. And Kapari did not play at all, which was a little surprising to me. But, yeah, Michigan State, they, and we'll hear more about this a little bit later, but they rotate 4 7-footers. I was joking with Ben during the game. I was like, are they creating these guys in labs? Like, they sub in one for the other. They look the exact same.
Well, and they all seem limited in the same way, and none of them necessarily seem to want the ball in their hands except for the moment they rebound it, and then it's how quickly can I hot potato this to somebody else, and none of them have the most polished offensive games, but they serve a purpose. They know what they're there for, and they put in a quality shift. I mean, yeah, you look at a team like that that goes on the road in an environment like that, and you use everybody at least 9 minutes, and the only guy who plays even 27 minutes is their best player, Richardson, who was their best player.
Atkins played 27 also, but yes.
Over 27.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. He's it.
Yeah, yeah. Atkins exactly 27, yeah.
Atkins played 26 minutes, 25 seconds.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
One guy was on the court at least 27 minutes. Richardson.
They rounded it up on my box. Yeah.
And that was something that we were talking about a lot yesterday, how on the season, 10 guys average 15 minutes or more for Michigan State, which is a stark difference from Maryland. And a reason why DHS played 17 minutes, the most minutes he's played in a while, was because Selden Miguel picked up 2 fouls in the first 2.5 minutes of the game.
He had foul two with like 17, 20. And by the way, can we touch on this before we get? And I do want to hear from Izzo, so I'll call for that in a second, Ben. But Kapari not playing at all.
It was weird because I asked Greg Manning Jr. specifically about Geronimo and Kapari when we had him on before the game, and he seemed very into my sort of notion that both those guys could play a role. He thought Geronimo was in line to play his most minutes of a season. That didn't happen. Yeah. He was under 10.
That stuff on the dunk was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, awesome. His defensive awareness and the intangibles that he brings, especially when he's allowed to play this role. Last year, he got overexposed. They asked way too much out of him. It wasn't fair to him. Wasn't fair to the program. And it was way too much. It was what it was. But this is perfect for him. I thought he would have played more like maybe 12 to 14. DHS was a plus 11. DHS did his job. Dirty work. Don't turn it over. keep things, you know, keep things at bay.
Took two bad shots.
Yeah, he's not going to score. He can't score. Nah. Like, he can't score. I don't ever want to see him take another three-pointer. But he at least put in a quality shift. But it's hard to match. It's hard to match 7 for 10 in a tight game like that. It's hard to match 7 for, and that's what it was. It was our 7 versus their 10.
For sure. But there was that one stretch, and it might have been all 4 of the minutes that Jae Young played, where Young, Geronimo, and DHS were on the court at the same time.
And it looked like Willer was trying to get the TV timeout with that group. Let's hear from Tom Izzo, who spoke after the game and talked about the tough back-and-forth game.
Well, if any of you ever saw a rock fight, or you didn't see a rock fight, you saw one tonight. And I'm not sure either coach was happy with their performance in the first half. I know I wasn't happy with the 9 turnovers. I give, you know, a lot of the credit to them. I give some of the blame to us. But the second half, I hate to say it because I thought Kevin did a phenomenal job. He got him back in the game. We made a couple of bonehead plays, but I felt we deserved to win the game. I don't think it was a lucky shot at the end. I thought we played inspired basketball, good defensively, moved the ball. We got Jace Richardson going, and give Kevin credit. Then they went back to the zone and took him out of it a little bit. Then he started cramping up, so we had to get him in and out. And all in all, ugly game. But, you know, for us, a pretty win's better than an ugly loss. And it was an ugly game because both teams played so hard. And those kids play hard, too, boy, that he's got. And he's done a hell of a job where he came from last year to this year. And I don't even know what to say about my team. We're gritty. We keep on fighting, and yet we got to get better offensively in some areas if we're going to really make some noise.
He was effusive in his praise during his presser, Jason. We were there for it. Not only about how good he thought Maryland was, but the atmosphere in that place. To me, two things stood out last night. We stayed for postgame.
Yeah.
Two things stood out. How effusive Izzo was about Maryland, the program, and the crowd. And then something I wanted to get to with you personally, because you were once a college journalism student who dealt with a coach at Syracuse. I was blown away with how generous Willard was with the student media after the game.
Yeah. First, to the rock fight that he was talking about, these teams combined to go 1-15 from behind the arc in the first half. They were 17-59 combined from the field in the first half. There were more blocks, 5, in the first half than total assists. 4! That's for both teams!
Yeah,
there were insane. 13 turnovers combined to 4 assists in the first half of this rock fight. As to Izzo talking about the environment, I don't think he's one to blow smoke.
No.
He's been up and down this conference for decades, and he spoke of Willard kind of awakening a sleeping giant. That's what it sounded like to me when he talked about the way that building is built, the way the sound is trapped behind that one goal near the opposing team's bench, and as activated as those kids were in the stands, in the student section, it definitely left an impression on Izzo. And yes, I thought Kevin Willard showed an incredibly deft touch and after a real a human side after as tough a loss as you're going to get. And they did a great job taking a lot of questions from the student journalists, not making them feel less than the quote-unquote professionals who were there. And I think Willard, I mean, a lot of these coaches, like, those kids are paying money to go to this school. Yeah. Like, they're literally paying your salary. Like, that's part of the deal. You chose college, not the pro ranks. You're going to deal with some of this. That's part of the great sort of, intimacy in a different environment you get on a campus. And yes, I was super impressed. Not all coaches are that way.
How was your experience, Jason?
I hate Jim Boeheim to this day. I don't really support the Syracuse program. My daughter went to Syracuse against my best wishes. Not quite over my dead body, but close to it. Now, she's loving it up there.
To you guys?
What's that?
Was he just a jerk to you guys?
He would go out of his way to be a... I almost said a word I'm not sure we're allowed to say.
Don't do it.
To the kids... And at the same time, rub it in your face the way he dealt with the guys from the Syracuse Post-Standard and the Herald American and all the... I don't respect him. I don't respect him. Now, I was going there almost on a full ride. But, like, that place back in the day was 50, 60 grand, like, 30 years ago when I was in college. And, yeah, there were kids who he was spitting on figuratively, who parents probably were paying that full freight. And it just never sat well with me as an 18, 19-year-old and to this day. So hats off to Coach Willard.
We'll get more from Coach Willard later on in the show, but we switch gears, get to baseball coming up next. We recap Sagano from yesterday and update you what's going on today. Orioles taking on the Blue Jays. How's it going? We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.
Orioles spring training debut, Tomo Sagano. He bounces this double play ball to second. And there's a 4-6-3 DP. And there's Andrew McCutchen, his first at bat of the spring. He bounces this ball to the shortstop without Corbin Burns, who signed that big contract to go to Arizona. Bouncing ball to the right side. Far to his left is Jackson Holliday. Fields the ball on the outfield grass. And he throws on to Mountcastle at first to retire Derek Hall.
So we got Pirates Radio with Tomoyuki Sagano's debut yesterday. Or Orioles aren't posting any audio, so we live with that. Alas, Sagano, first appearance. Before we get to what's going on today, Jason, pretty satisfied with what you saw from the guy in his first time going against major leaguers?
Absolutely. No issues gripping the ball, no issues adapting to any of the many things that are different about the major leagues, even in spring training. To Japan, flashed his whole pitch mix. The velocity was about what we were told. And his command is going to have to be superior. He's going to have to be one of the elite control guys in baseball. That's what he was in Japan, and that's what allowed him to thrive and excel in a league where sitting 93 or sitting 91, 92 and hitting 93, 94 is still less than ideal. He's past the point in his career where you're talking about velo ads or anything like that. It's about a finesse, nuanced guy being at the top of his craft more times than not. He's going to have the advantage the first, you know, couple months of the season where no one's got much of a book on him. And yeah, you're looking at some of what he did in Japan, but there will be adjustments that are made. And even the strike zone's a little different, adapting to the different umpires and the nuances from you know, crew to crew. I'm sure he'll be up for all that. The ball also travels around here, and the ball's, I think, more juiced at the major league level than over there. And I don't know that he's pitched a whole lot in 95 degrees, 98% humidity, which welcome to Baltimore.
Yeah. Something that I was also thinking about in terms of Sugano adjusting to MLB's game here, I can't imagine there's a pitch clock over in Japan. That's got to be a big adjustment for him as well.
He had a throwing day. He pitched on a certain day with a different ball in games that are paced differently. Even the commercial breaks, it's all different.
So let's get to today. And let's start with some ominous news. Gunnar Henderson grounded out his first at bat and then left the game with a trainer. We don't know anything more yet. We'll hear from Brandon Hyde. He'll talk to the guys down there afterwards. He'll give us an update. It might be precautionary, but not exactly the best thing in the world, especially on the heels of finding out Jordan Westbrook's got a lower back issue, so he's going to miss a few more days.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to take no chances with any of these guys. You hope it is just being overly cautious and precautious, and obviously something is tweaked, something's wrong, to have them consider taking him out of the game. You're hoping he's going to be just off his feet for a few days. Obviously, we will get that information to you. Everybody at this point just wants to hit fast forward on the last three innings of this game. So the skipper comes out and gives us whatever sort of update they're going to give us. Let's be real. As many shortstops as they've drafted and as much, you know, as they've invested in that position being part of the profiles that has drawn them to utilize so many top picks on kids they thought could play shortstop. Shortstop's not a very deep position in this organization whatsoever. Jordan Westberg, I don't think it's going to play up here. We know it's not going to play with Jackson Holliday up here, certainly not where he is at this point with his arm strength and everything else. Like, Ramon, it's really bad when they've had to do that there. Like, it's Vasquez, it's Levon Soto types. I mean, that's
Jorge's back.
That's what I'm saying. That's where
when's
he coming back?
You think you're seeing him before Memorial Day?
No.
I don't. I mean, he's got a long way to go. I mean, they basically said he's not even really going to be doing anything real all the spring. So that is not an area where, like, you know, the next man up is from within or anybody could really hold it down. I mean, you're talking about glove first 4A guys being the ones who would have to play any meaningful stretch at that position where, God forbid, this to be something that happened in the regular season or affected this team in the regular season. And that's why, again, for me, the Jackson Holiday thing and the Jackson Holiday hype and all that, what was he billed to you as? And what is he now? And this is not the end all and be all, and this is a snapshot in time. But like, part of the reason he had all the value, but I'm just saying, they sold you a 1-1 catcher who was supposed to be an elite top flight catcher. Take the hitting stuff out of it. He's supposed to be a guy who you can't pry out of that position, who you would never think of DHing in game one of a playoff series because he's so singularly good back there. And that hasn't been the case. And then when this kid's a 1-1, mm-hmm. he's billed to you as a shortstop, and Gunner might have to move to third for this kid. Oh, really? So I'm just saying, it's nothing against the kid, but they ought to be careful with how they sell stuff over there because they're full of their own crap a lot of the time.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. I remember doing multiple segments of, obviously, well before Jackson Holiday even made his debut. Well, Jackson's going to be the future shortstop after 2023. Are you just going to move Gunner to third and he'll be your full-time third baseman? And when Jackson's up, he has it ready. And then, of course, prior to spring training last year, Brandon and I said no. Gunner's our full-time shortstop.
And he was the 1-1, and his career is still in front of him, but when you look at him and who went after him, like maybe like it's Drew Jones, Kumar Rocker, Tamar Johnson, Elijah Green, he might still be the best of that group.
He absolutely might be the best of that group, but part of the reason he was billed so much above Tamar Johnson, who at that time had an elite hit tool. Yeah. You could dream on more power for Jackson, but Tamar was just the second baseman.
Rock,
I mean, that was the knock against him.
Yeah. Rock just tweeted out, Gunnar Henderson had lower right side discomfort.
Could be an oblique.
That's exactly what I was thinking, and that is not good news.
Yeah, that could be out a while, but let's hope it's just something minor.
Well, he better sit a long while, even if it's a chance that it gets escalated into a pulled oblique situation.
Good news real quick. Orioles lead 7-4 in the fifth. Colin Selby gave up four runs. They were up 7-0. Tyler O'Neill hit a three-run bomb in this one, and Ramon Urias, a two-run homer.
Yeah. Look, Tyler O'Neill looks like Rocky Balboa. He can hit the ball a million miles. There's some things that he brings that play immediately.
So hope he stays healthy.
Yeah, and you know, favorable matchups. I don't. If Heston Kjerstad does what they think he could do, I just don't think that Tyler O'Neill is playing more than three times a week. But again, I say that. And we're sitting here talking about a potential Gunnar Henderson oblique injury.
Yeah.
So things have a way, again, of working themselves out, not always for the best. But I think with Tyler O'Neill, the more you're able to utilize him in premium matchups and not overextend him in the outfield, the better chance you have of getting him through the full season.
Coming up next, we stick with the O's and the backup catcher situation. Is Gary Sanchez the man to take over for James McCann? And could he be even more than just a backup catcher? Could that bat play this season? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
No, both those guys, you know, Mac did an awesome job for us the last couple of years. Robbie Chirinos before that in a backup role. And then, you know, they know Adley really well. You know, there's always going to be, with the new catcher and Gary, there's going to be some get-to-know throughout camp. That's going to be important for us that he catches everybody. These 6 weeks is going to be a real get-to-know for him, as well as the pitchers, understanding what they like, what they don't like, how to set up, et cetera. But I've been on a couple of Zooms with Gary, too, and he's a pro, and looking forward to the season to start.
Brandon Hyde talking about their new catcher, Gary Sanchez. If memory serves, James McCann is not signed anywhere yet. He is still out on the street, but the Orioles chose to go in a different direction. That direction is Gary Sanchez, who does not have the defensive reputation that James McCann has. He does have a bit of a power bat, though. When he does connect with the baseball, it goes a long way. So, Jason, you've had some time to marinate on this. He's worked with some pitchers. He's been in a couple spring training games. Is he the right guy to replace James McCann?
This was another one where they kind of waited, right? Like O'Neill, they were a little bit proactive on. I think they might have overpaid. This one, they were more waiting. It got down to just a few names still out there, including McCann, and then they basically gave Sanchez the kind of money that all these backups were getting, including guys like Darnold, who I think are a lot better behind the plate. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder if they missed the mark a little bit here. I do wonder if, as much as we talk about how progressive they are and how moneyball they are, I've said it once, I've said it a million times, they got a lot of Dan Duquette in their game, too. And I do think the power, especially knowing that they're changing the wall configurations, which they had to have known for a long time before they did it, played a role in this. And I think they get seduced by that. But, I mean, let's not get it twisted. This guy's in the 20th percentile in blocks above average. Like, it's not even salvageable at this stage of his career. Like, his framing metrics are terrible. He is slightly above average, caught stealing. And he does have a big arm. He has a hard time keeping it accurate. But he's not going to provide anything other than power. I mean, a 309 weighted on base average? Like, eh? A 219 expected batting average? Eh? He's going to chase more than you'd like. He's going to strike out a little bit more than you'd like. He has to hit home runs. I mean, he has to produce. 2 years ago, he slugged .492. You get anything close to that, they're going to be willing to live with a whole lot of other stuff. But, like, that's also an outlier between a couple of years where he wore out his welcome in some places and where he kind of had some issues with catching certain pitchers in certain places. So I'm interested to see where it goes. I still have a pet theory that a third catcher is going to have to be in this mix for one reason or another. Maybe Adley related, maybe Sanchez related, maybe just both, maybe just Hyder related. But it is surprising to me that you came off of Chirinos, who couldn't hit a lick, but everybody loved him and loved throwing to him and all that. And McCann, whose clearly offensive profile was on the downswing, but brought all those intangibles. And now you've got, in a year where expectations should be the highest, a guy who brings none of that other stuff, but you think might be able to really thump for you.
Well, I think what's interesting, if you compare McCann and Sanchez's baseball savants, interestingly enough, Sanchez grades out better defensively. Now, it's marginally better, and that's sort of how you view this move, right? Where he is a better hitter. Last year, at least, he is a better defender. When you're looking at blocks above average, McCann, the only area he beat him was caught stealing above average. Sanchez is better framing, better pop time. And obviously, we know that Sanchez is a better hitter. Now, it's improving on the margins, though, to me. They waited at the end when all the catchers were getting signed up, and that was kind of the last seat at the musical chairs, if you will. But it's really improving on the margins.
It's the timing's weird, too. Just to clarify something, they announced the O'Neill and Sanchez signings on the same day. But the factor that Jay, and for people listening, all the other backup catchers had gone already.
Yeah, they waited for. I mean, this was
the last
it.
Chair.
Yeah. This was really kind of it. Yeah. And like, I mean, would I rather have this guy or Danny Jansen? I'd rather have Danny Jansen 8 days a week. Now, Danny Jansen might want to play more than this guy was sort of thought to need to play. But I also wonder if it does break down like last year and he has to catch as much as McCann catches, I wonder what his defensive metrics would look like then.
For T-Bone. Sure.
Wonder, if he ends up catching 2-3 times a week because the other guy's in a slump or the other guy's not hitting when he catches.
Absolutely. He's in good shape, Jason.
Yeah, right. Okay.
He's in good shape
now. He's not
now.
A spring chicken.
I'm talking about the other guy. The other guy's in good shape.
Oh, yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, shape or not.
He better be catching.
He's got to be
if
catching.
If this one. Guy's got to do what McCann's got to do, this guy had to catch a playoff game.
Well, and that's that's the other thing.
Bradley DH'd.
That happened.
Yeah. That's the other thing with
who
McCann.
Who couldn't hit where and he DH'd.
That's the other thing with McCann where I feel like people forget where offensively, just talking offensively, he couldn't hit a lick the first half of the year, but down the stretch, yeah. he was giving them something at the plate.
And then he struck out in the playoffs.
In the playoff
game. The fact that he was in the lineup in the first place, I think, spoke more to Adley being who he was. And by the way, a guy who wasn't hitting, being your designated hitter in a playoff game, was quite a message. And having him near the top of your lineup, another great message. But Jason, you talk about injuries possibly happening, and Tyler O'Neill, and you know, like he never plays 162. There is a world where possibly Gary Sanchez is maybe DHing against left-handed pitching at some point in the season. Give you an extra thump in the lineup.
And that's where then I start to think about the specter of a third catcher.
Yeah. A David Benuelos?
Yeah, I mean, if you get to a point, I think you could get to a point where if Jorge Mateo's back and he's everything they think he could be, then that kind of can be a two-for-one roster spot. And that could give you some flexibility. And by that point, you've probably weeded some of this out. You know, and is this guy staying healthy? Is this guy who we thought he was? Did we put too much on this young guy's plate? And you may reach the point in time in middle of June, early July, something like that, where Mateo's, you're finding ways that you want Mateo in your lineup and you can move him around, and positional flexibility sort of opens up a road for you to maybe double down at a different position group with more manpower than the average team might utilize there.
We'll switch to Ravens coming up next. And Eric DaCosta spoke to the media the other day, and he was back to getting his messaging out about how the Ravens spend, what they're up against. The cap did get announced officially. They have a little extra money, but so does every team. But Ravens complaining about the salary cap. That is on brand, and Jason has something to say about it next here on The Fan.